the Better Health Radio Show. And as usual, you've got your host of the program, Dr. Renee Boyce. She's on deck, so let's say a very good evening to her. Good evening to you, Doc.
Good evening, Grayston. Good evening to all of our listeners. Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show, helping you to live your best life. There isn't anybody on this island by now who has not heard about COVID-19. And today we're going to have what I've called a candid conversation about COVID. So we're going to be discussing all the way back from the basics, all the way to the future, and a few different aspects of the virus. We're going to take a look at the psychosocial fallout, as it were, of the virus. What are some of the things that can happen in the communities as a result of persons who might have fears about the virus, about persons who might be infected with the virus and their feelings and so on. So we do have a special guest that we're going to be tapping into her resources a little later on in the program. So do share with us, stay with us. And remember, if you want to give us a call here in the studio, 434-1790. And the WhatsApp is 266-4862. So when you try to understand something, it really does serve you well to try to go back to the beginning to figure out what has been going on, what has happened. And last year in 2019, nobody really expected to hear that there was a new virus on the horizon. And one of the things that I want to let us know as listeners is that pandemics are nothing new. We've weathered storms before as a human race, and several years down the road, we are still here as a race. We are still here as a people. And it's not easy to tell people don't panic, because the automatic response when you hear the word panic is to do the same thing and panic. I think when we heard the persons, one of the earlier broadcasts, they mentioned about being prepared and about protecting yourself and so on. And this is the way that we're trying to go. So back in December 2019, in China, it was noted that there was an increase in the amount of a certain type of respiratory illness. And this is important for us to understand the value of surveillance. To have surveillance means that you're just looking at a particular thing. So in epidemiology and in public health, in any community, you expect to see a certain number of diseases in a given period of time. But once you start to see reports of a particular illness, more than you expect, that sets off an alarm bell. Something is going on. Something is going wrong. And this is what happened in China. And this is how we ended up where we are. The virus has a very long scientific name, SARS-CoV-2. So it's much easier to roll off the tongue when we say COVID-19. COVID being the coronavirus disease, and 19 from the year 2019. It's a type of coronavirus, and just a little bit of knowledge, corona meaning crown. When you look at the virus under the microscope, it has these spicules, these pointy things on the outside of the virus that gives it the shape of a crown. So that's why it's called the coronavirus. And this particular one, COVID-19, it belongs to a group of viruses. So it's not only one. Similar viruses being SARS and MERS, SARS being severe acute respiratory syndrome, MERS, Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome. So it's not a virus by itself. It belongs to a community of viruses. So we want to send a special shout out to those persons who are on the ground from Port Health, those persons who are up to their ears doing testing on individuals and trying to manage the hotline, which we're going to discuss a little later on in the show. But you can imagine that there is a significant amount of work trying to control something that's not 100% understood. We can't even control those things that we understand. Furthermore, trying to control those things about which we are now learning, because this virus is new. And one of the difficult things that happened is that this virus turned up in the same period of time where we usually have flu-like symptoms. So it might have been difficult to pick up all of the cases that might have been presenting to different healthcare institutions and so on. So that was one of the challenges in the initial stages of the COVID-19, well, it would have been an epidemic back then, but it's a pandemic since March the 11th, I believe. And to help us understand what a pandemic is, we're going to do a little Greek. Yes, it's not only about salads, but Greek for pandemic comes from pan, meaning all, and demos, meaning people. So a pandemic is a new illness which affects all people, everybody. Now, the World Health Organization has divided the world into six different regions, and this coronavirus has reached all six of those regions. Therefore, it is a pandemic. One of the things about a pandemic is that it has the potential to wreak havoc on the world's population. Back in, was it 1918 or thereabouts? I think Spanish flu was back. I might have the year incorrect, and of course you know that I will look that up for you and give you the correct year. But I think the research said millions of people, the number is just out of my head right now, but several million people were killed in the Spanish flu. And here's another fun fact. I don't know if fun is the right adjective to use, but HIV is a pandemic. HIV is a pandemic. So that gives you an idea, a disease that has spread to all the regions in the world involving all people. Now, the big question is, how is this virus spread? Because there is a lot of discussion on social media going on about, is it airborne? Is it by droplets? How long do the droplets stay on surfaces? Is it safe for me to touch anything? Right now, the World Health Organization, Centers for Disease Control, Pan American Health Organization, the authorities that we depend on for information and guidance about health practices, they think that it is person-to-person spread, respiratory droplets. So you have to be in contact with a person, the distance being about 6 feet, and the virus particles are contained in these respiratory droplets. Based on the fact that this disease seems to be spreading so very quickly, it is being entertained at this point in time whether or not it could be airborne. Let me just say that again. Based on the fact that the disease is spreading so rapidly, scientists are entertaining the possibility that the spread can be airborne. It is not confirmed that the virus is spread by the airborne route, so right now we're sticking with droplets. And that has implications for protection, about how we protect ourselves. The way we protect ourselves is by washing our hands. I remember one of the... You see, that was Gregston in the studio.
That was Gregston in the studio. Poor Gregston. Yes. It was just funny that whilst you were saying washing your hands,
yes, I was here sanitizing my hands. Yes, he's here sanitizing his hands. You need to do that for 20 seconds, by the way. And let me take a look at this alcohol-based sanitizer that is in the studio. Let's look at the percentage of alcohol. I have not. Oh, yes, I have found it. So the recommendation is for the alcohol percentage to be at least 60%. This one is 62%. Hmm. So, you know, you're barely making the grade.
So Starcom did not spare the big bucks thing on this one.
We made it 62%. So it's recommended that you wash your hands. One of the first things that you are taught in primary school, apart from writing and reading and arithmetic, is about washing your hands. There was a study done where some person did a study on the keypads for, you know, when you go into fast food restaurants overseas and you can place your order on the keypad before you get to the counter where you take away your food. And somebody did a study testing for bacteria and whatever else and whatever germs might have been found on that keypad. And believe it or not, feces were found on that keypad in a restaurant where people are ordering food. Now, let that information sink in. That information is not meant to cause panic, but it's to alert us to the fact that hand washing still remains the single most effective remedy for the prevention of illnesses. Respiratory illnesses, those affecting the gastrointestinal tract, those that affect the skin, wash your hands. And what's the recommendation for washing your hands? At least 20 seconds with soap and water. The preferred method is soap and water. So it's not a case of you're at home in your house and you just go and take up a bottle of sanitizer and wipe off your hands. You're at home, you have water, you have soap. Wash your hands with soap at least 20 seconds. And the idea is to make sure that all the surfaces of your hands have been thoroughly touched with the soap and water. And you try your best not to let the water drip back down your hands. You try to let it drip into the sink. And you try not to turn the sink off with, well, not the sink, you can't turn off the sink, turn the faucet or tap off with your hands which have just been washed. In the event that you are in a place where there isn't any soap and water available, yes, we can use the hand sanitizer because here in the studio there's no water. So Gaston did the right thing. Granted, it was not for 20 seconds, but...
All that time you were talking, 20 seconds has nothing
left. It was not 20 seconds. No, it was not. So the hand sanitizers, it's also supposed to be 20 seconds as well. And they recommend that you can sing the happy birthday song. When you sing the happy birthday song, do not do like the little children and sing the happy birthday song at the speed of light. Because what the children have been doing is they've been singing it quickly so they can get back to doing what they were doing in the first place. So you can't say that they haven't been singing the happy birthday song, they haven't been washing their hands, but they're doing it at twice the regular speed. So you do it at the regular speed and make sure that you use tissue to turn the tap off. So what are the symptoms of the COVID-19 infection? Pretty much the symptoms of the COVID-19 infection are those of any flu-like illness. The three that they've used to define a case of coronavirus 19 infection would be fever, sore throat, and difficulty breathing. But viral infections, including COVID-19, can come with other things such as cough, such as redness in the eyes. It can come with aches in the joints, sore muscles. Anything that you've had before when you've had the flu, the same COVID-19 virus can present with. So this is why sometimes it's so difficult to try to figure out whether or not you've had this particular infection. In the initial stages, when the virus was first being seen in other countries, in order to be considered a case, you had to have a travel history from one of the affected areas. So you had to have been in China or Taiwan or somewhere out in Asia. But now that we have what seems to be local transmission, cases being passed from one person in the country to another person in the country without a travel history, that doesn't necessarily feature as much in the case definition, but it still stands as the case definition, but we've moved on to stage two. And you might ask, what is stage two? The viral infection is divided into four stages, 0, 1, 2, and 3. Well, this is actually the response of the government to the infection. So at stage zero, we didn't have any cases. At stage one, the cases that were present on the island would have been imported cases only. And where we are at stage two, as I just explained, where those persons who are infected with the virus now are not persons who have a travel history, but it seems that they've picked it up from someone else who's on the island. So what you have is local spread, person-to-person spread in the country. By the time you get to stage three, as opposed to stage two, where there are only small pockets of infection, in stage three, it's wide local spread of this particular infection. And in stage three, the government would tend to call a state of emergency. So what we're going to do, we're going to take a break, and then in about another 30 seconds or so, we'll be back to discuss the COVID-19 infection.
Germany is banning gatherings of more than two people in public outside work as it tightens measures to try to stem the coronavirus pandemic.
In public, it's going to be compulsory to stand at least 1.5 metres, better 2 metres apart from other people. You're allowed to go out in public on your own or with one other person not in the same household or with people in the same household. You can go to work, you can go to the doctor, you can go out to individually practice sport and get some fresh air. Most other activities outside are banned, as are groups of people gathering together also inside. This will last for 2 weeks, and at that point, the government will look again to see what sort of impact these rules have had on the spread of the virus.
For the first time since the pandemic took hold, Italy has announced a slight decrease in the rate of new infections. Another 651 people died in the last 24 hours.
It's been an utterly bleak week for Italy. Its president, Sergio Mattarella, has spoken of the pain his society was undergoing, saying its elder generation had been decimated in parts of the country.
All right, time has gone on now to 16 after 6. You're into the Better Health Radio Show, and we've got Dr. Renee Boyce presenting for you.
Welcome back to the Better Health Radio Show. where are we now with this COVID-19 infection? Yesterday, I had done some research, and when I was chatting with a group of persons, the infections had been maybe in the 200,000s, 260-something thousand persons. And we chatted about it being the population of Barbados, if we wanted to have a visual idea of the numbers. When I checked the numbers for today, 340,408 cases with 14,573 deaths. And here in Barbados, we have 14 cases. We don't have any deaths in Barbados, and we're very thankful for that. We've had two deaths within the region. We want to focus in a little bit on those deaths, but one of the things that I really do want to reinforce is that most persons who have been infected with the COVID-19 infection do recover. And most persons, again, have mild to moderate symptoms. In some cases, persons' symptoms might be so mild that they don't seek any sort of medical attention at all. So it is not that if you get the COVID-19 infection, you're going to end up in ICU. That's not an automatic thing at all. So we want to focus on those two persons who unfortunately died in the region. I think it would have been Guyana and Jamaica that we had those two deaths. When we look back at what the report had said, those persons had uncontrolled diabetes and hypertension. I think that piece of information is very instructive for us, that we as persons, if we know we have those chronic diseases, now would not be the time to see whether or not you can eat all the jam puffs and turnovers that you can possibly eat before the bakeries close or something like that. Now is the time to get those diseases under control. Speak with your doctor about the best way, your doctor, your healthcare provider, your nurse, your community nurse, your nutritionist. We had the community nutrition officer in last week. So you have a conversation about what you can do to get these things under control. Remember, we're not looking at panicking, we're looking at being prepared. Who's at risk? Anybody is at risk. So there is a belief going around that only elderly persons are at risk for the COVID-19 infection. That's not true. The caveat is that older persons and those with underlying chronic diseases such as diabetes and hypertension and asthma, cancers, those who might have HIV and are immunosuppressed, heart disease. So the long list of underlying diseases, they are at risk for more serious complications. So it's not that a person who is 25 is not at risk for getting the COVID-19 infection. That's not true at all. Everybody is at risk. But the risk for the serious complications is higher in that particular age group. The elderly, the extremes of age. So the tiny, tiny ones and the very elderly ones and those who are immunocompromised. And I say that meaning those persons who have underlying illnesses. Those are the ones who are at risk for more serious complications. And again, it must be said that those persons who don't have a chronic illness, the way viruses work, you never know. Some of those persons might end up having, we can't guarantee that because you don't have an underlying infection that you won't get a serious case. So again, it comes all the way back to prevention. I came across what was a very informative study. It was a quick study, so it isn't one of the official ones to be published in papers where you control every outcome. This was a study where we were looking to see how far droplets were expelled from a violent sneeze. So they spread out a white sheet of paper and they use some dye in their mouth so that you can color the droplets. And they use various methods to try to contain the sneeze. So it was an open sneeze first to see how far droplets could travel. Can you imagine? Droplets went as far as 11.5 feet. So if you know somebody who's 6 feet tall, put them to lie down and then just take off half of them and, you know, spread out that piece. That gives you pretty much an idea. That's about 9 feet there of how far droplets are going from you when you sneeze without trying to contain that sneeze. Then they tried using your hands to try to contain the sneeze. And of course, as you can imagine, that really does not do a very good job of holding in the droplets. So the one from your hand where you use your hand to cover and catch the sneeze, they went as far as 8.5 feet. And when you think about it, all of those droplets are now on your hands. Ooh. So we tried the flex elbow, which is the next recommendation for trying to contain a sneeze or a cough, where you bend your And I'm doing it like if you can see it, but you can't. Where you bend your elbow towards your face and you try to get as many as the particles in your elbow rather than all over the place. And they went as far as 3.5 feet. And the last one they used was a tissue. And guess how far those droplets went, Gregston?
In the tissue?
Mm-hmm.
Less than a foot.
0 feet.
All right, there you go.
Yay! Up and on.
Keep the flame burning brightly ever.
Could not resist it. Yes, 0 feet. Those droplets were contained by the tissue. And I'm sure it has a lot to do with the integrity of the tissue. Because if you have one of those tissues that if it barely gets wet, it disintegrates, that's no help to anybody. But if you have a decent tissue and you fold it a couple times, you can contain the sneeze. And then the instructions would be, right after you sneeze, discard of the tissue and go and wash your hands in the way that we recommend is soap and water or an alcohol-based hand sanitizer, at least 60% alcohol in that hand sanitizer. Another thing that has been coming up would be, how can we treat this particular viral infection? And most viruses don't have any specific treatment. So you usually end up treating the symptoms. Recently, there was much talk about banning the use of ibuprofen and other similar drugs which fall into that category called NSAIDs, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. Things like ibuprofen and diclofenac, or, well, not to call brands, but those particular drugs. And it was based on some information that was coming out of France which suggested that use of those drugs seemed to accelerate the symptoms and the severity of the COVID-19 infection. The World Health Organization has not declared a ban on those particular class, on that particular class of drugs. As a matter of fact, their quote is that they're gathering further evidence. And it sounds almost to some people who are in, you know, just watching and waiting, that it sounds like hedging. But really and truly, when you think about the World Health Organization, when you think about our own Ministry of Health and our government, you have to be so careful with what you say, with what you do, the information that you pass out. Everything must be taken in stride, and decisions just cannot be made willy-nilly and off the bat just like that. So research must be done so that you are sending out the best information for the safety for the most people that you can send this information out to. So as of now, the World Health Organization has not said that you can't use those drugs, but I think people might still prefer to err on the side of caution and use something like acetaminophen or paracetamol.
Ibuprofen is a painkiller?
It is.
Okay.
Yes, it's used to treat pain and fever, swelling. Hmm. But there's no official word from the persons that we depend on for our health guidance in situations like this. But people might prefer to err on the side of caution, like I said. So the safest thing to do might just be to use paracetamol, like I said, or acetaminophen, the good old Panadol.
When you were there discussing the
Tylenol
distance that the droplets from the sneeze could go to,
mm-hmm.
I was trying so hard to remember, and I wasn't surprised by the number, the feet that you said one uncovered about 11 feet or so,
mm-hmm.
because I was trying to remember what speed. I thought it was 200 miles, but I was wrong. I just looked it up. The speed of a sneeze, it leaves your body over 100 miles per hour. So I'm not surprised it can go that distance. I knew the answer in terms of the miles per hour, but I wasn't too sure if it had the exact one. So I just looked it up, and yeah, I understand now it can go 11 feet if you don't cover your face, because it's coming out real fast, you see.
And when you think about it, it is almost, you know, you probably, if you're scornful, you probably wouldn't ever want to touch anything again in life. But the problem doesn't come when you touch things necessarily. The problem comes with what you do after you've touched something.
Mm-hmm.
And they say it's about 20 times in every, is it 20 times every hour, I believe? 20 times per hour you touch your face. But it could be more than that. And persons who wear glasses as well, especially your glasses slide down your face, so you push them back up, and mm-hmm. then you touch your face and so on.
Just to put them on, sometimes you touch your face.
You touch your face, example. Exactly. So you have to be very careful what you do with your hands after you've touched a surface. The other thing, the other information that has been coming out would be that persons are being told on the social media that the drugs for diabetes and hypertension were also associated with accelerating the infection of the COVID-19 infection. again, that information has not proven to be true. Mm-hmm. We're advising that you don't just stop your medication. So if you receive something on your WhatsApp that says medication X for diabetes has been shown to increase the death rate in coronavirus, that's something that you should pick up the phone and speak with your doctor about. Don't automatically stop drug X, and then your blood sugars are up in the air.
Put yourself ready.
You put yourself at an increased risk. There are persons who don't think that diabetes and hypertension should be treated with medication, and that's another discussion for another time. But if you are on medication by your doctor and you've agreed to follow a particular treatment protocol with your doctor, then if any changes are to be made, the ideal situation is that you discuss this with your doctor first before making any changes, because we don't know what will happen as a result of those changes that would have been made. So we don't force persons to take medication or not. It's a discussion. It's patient-centered care, where the patient is at the center. The patient is at the center of this whole COVID-19 outbreak. Now, we've looked at the medical section of, and when I say medical, I mean medicine, internal medicine. But we're going to take a look at another branch of medicine. We're going to take a look into psychology/psychiatry. We are going to make a telephone call to one of the trusted professionals here in Barbados. She's been a psychiatrist for a very long time. And this is Dr. Ermine Bell. And we are going to chat with her a little bit, trying to understand behavior response, I guess, what she is seeing on the ground, how people are reacting to these, the news about COVID-19 and about it being here and about us having 14 cases and what's going to happen next. So we're going to take a little time and connect with Dr. Bell.
New York's governor is asking the Trump administration for more help to combat the coronavirus pandemic. The number of confirmed cases in that state has grown quickly to more than 15,000. NPR's Joel Rose has more.
Governor Andrew Cuomo is calling on the Army Corps of Engineers to start building temporary hospitals in New York immediately. Cuomo says he's approved 4 sites in Manhattan, Westchester, and Long Island. He's also urging the federal government to order manufacturers to supply medical equipment, including protective masks, gowns, and gloves that are in short supply. Cuomo says that would relieve pressure on states that have been forced to bid against each other.
We get these facilities up, we get the supplies, we will save lives. If we don't, we will lose lives.
When the rate of infection peaks, Cuomo says New York will likely need 110,000 hospital beds, more than twice as many as the state has currently.
This is the Better Health Radio Show. We're heard here every Sunday, 6 to 7 on VOB. This evening, we're having a candid conversation about corona, and we've enlisted the help of Dr. Ermine Bell. She is a psychiatrist, and we're going to discuss a little bit about behavior, how people are reacting, is this normal behavior, and any tips that she might have for us with respect to how we should behave in these times. Good evening, Dr. Bell.
Hi, good evening, Dr. Ford. How are you? Dr. Boyce, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. Thank you so much for agreeing to be here with us. In your opinion, do you think that the way you're seeing persons behaving and those persons who might be calling you, do you think that this is normal behavior?
Well, let's put it this way. This is not a normal situation.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't really look for necessarily normalcy per se. What we have to do is to consider that there are a lot of different individuals all around us, and we are all dealing with what is a stress-related and very intense period caused by a virus, the COVID-19, which is an unknown entity up until now. And therefore, all of the things that will happen in a situation where you're dealing with the unknown are going to happen now. So you have a situation where people are going to not be able to answer questions to themselves. What is this all about? When is it going to stop? How is it going to affect me? How are my people around me going to be affected? If you are the person who is in charge of your family, the major breadwinner, mm-hmm. if you're the person who is the only person looking after the children in the family, what is going to happen to them if something happens to me? So we're not looking for normalcy. We are looking for reactions which will be laden with all of the various questions that are being put to people individually in their minds as they are bombarded with all of this new information.
What advice do you think you can give to persons to help them to ride through this storm?
You know, I've been listening to all of the information that has been coming at us from various directions. And I think that right now, if people will just settle down for the start, I mean, it's a late start, yes, because this has been going on for months, but we can only deal with what has come to us at this point in time. But people have to appreciate that knowledge is power.
Yes.
So information, the way you put out information, and you can't put out information one way only if you're dealing with different segments of a society. You have the elderly, you have the people in the workforce, you have the people who are adolescents who are invincible, you have the little children who get scared at everything, and if they see their parents scared, they're going to get even more scared. You have the people who are working frontline. All of these people, you have the people who have contracted or are working in situations where the possibility of contracting the illness is greater. You've got to be able to put out the message in such a way that all of these people feel reasonably empowered and reasonably able to understand what they're dealing with up until this point in time.
I think you've made a very valuable point there with the different sectors we have in society. A story was told to me about a teenage child who was asthmatic, and she was afraid, very afraid, that she was going to die. But after her teacher was able to explain a little bit more about the virus and so on, her fears would have been allayed. But I agree with you 100%. Knowledge really does give us power. And it's not necessarily just knowledge giving us power, but the use of that knowledge is what becomes important.
And I got to go to the other side of the coin, because ignorance does not help at all.
And when we say ignorance, we mean the true definition of ignorance.
I mean the fact that if you are getting information from sources that are not giving you accurate information, and you are imbibing it, and you are capitalizing it, and you are acting on it, then you are going to end up in a worse position than if you had no knowledge at all. So we have to be very wary of those people who are spreading propaganda, those people who are giving misinformation, those people who are running around saying, I heard so-and-so, but putting it on social media, for instance, as a fact. And it is extremely dangerous, because there are people who only listen to those media, and they feel, well, this is what it is all about, this is what is happening. Yes, I'm going to die, because they say that half of the people are going to get it, and the other half are then going to have to get it because the first half did. I mean, there's a mathematical calculation in some people's head. Mm-hmm. And therefore, you know, you end up terrorizing people, really, so that they then become incapacitated. They can't function. They can't think for themselves. And they can't definitely stave off a virus by doing the things that they should do, which is to follow the directives, to do the things that are supposed to keep it at bay, and to be conscious of the fact that there are certain things that no matter what, you have to be able to understand, to be able to deal with it with other sectors in the society, because you will become a teacher as well. You have to pass on knowledge once you gain it.
Right, that's the same discussion we were having yesterday. Everybody becomes a teacher by giving knowledge. We're not talking professionally here, but by giving knowledge. One last question for you, Dr. Bell. Let's zone in on that particular sector of society, those who have been diagnosed with mental health challenges. What can you advise them at this particular time as we go through this season?
Mental health challenges are not going to change because of COVID-19. Mental health challenges will remain mental health challenges. You still have to make sure that you have your medication. I work in a private office. My intention is to make sure that everybody's medication is available, that they're covered. If there's a lockdown, God forbid, they're going to have their medication because they must continue it. They're also going to have my numbers so that they can call in an emergency. I mightn't be able to go, but I may be able to calm somebody's fears. This is what we are dealing with, because before somebody becomes devastated because they are prone to mental health problems, you may be able to allay the fears that are gathering, so that they can ride through that period a little better. They can become calmer. They can understand the situation a bit better. So those individuals, treat them no differently. They have to get the information, but they must stay on their medication.
Dr. Bell, we really want to thank you for joining with us this evening to helping us ride through this storm of corona. We wish you safety as well as you take care of those in your care.
Thank you very much.
Have a good evening.
A pleasure. Thank you. Bye.
Yes, so I have a message here on WhatsApp that I'll try to cut down because it's a bit lengthy. But this person is saying that they're not able to understand how we can say that we're just concentrating on persons and not concentrate on the economy because of the fallout that you will have as a result of closing down the economy. And this person lives in the United States of America. One of the things that happens is that there is almost a chain reaction. When one sector is disadvantaged, there is a problem in another sector. So we've developed this virus in our country, and decisions have been made to reduce the number of persons gathering. So there is no sector in our economy that is not going to be affected. I am not an economist. I'm not an accountant. When I hear the words debit and credit, my eyes cross and I get a headache. Believe you me. But I can see that there is going to be potential for persons to be disadvantaged. But one of the things I thought about was when I make a decision in my household or the other people in my household, when they make decisions, Gregston.
I'm being very quiet.
No, you're not. So when my husband makes a decision in
my
household.
Oh, you can call his title? Oh, my goodness me.
I was trying, but there are households where there's only the female or only the male. When the person in charge of the household makes a decision for that household, at most they're making a decision for about six persons, let's say six. You know, there are larger families where the persons affected might be as high as 15. But when the person's in charge at the Ministry of Health, the Prime Minister, those persons who, the Minister of Tourism and all the other persons who are on the front line of decision-making at this point in time, when they make decisions, they're making decisions for 200 and something thousand people.
Let's call it 300.
Yeah, well, yes. Let's call it 300. But they're also making decisions that will impact all the persons who are still coming to our borders. It cannot be easy to make a decision like in a time like this. And this is by no means political. Let me just say that. This is just a logical statement. It must be difficult to make decisions in a time like this, but this is where the World Health Organization comes in. This is where you get information from what has happened in other countries in the region, how they've managed, and this is where you speak with those persons who have become experts in the field, and then you base your decisions on that. We will have to manage the fallout, whatever that fallout turns out to be. We don't know how long this virus is going to go until it peters out. We don't know how many deaths we're going to have in the region, and we really hope and pray that it's no more than two. But we have to try to control our resources. We have to try to protect ourselves as a nation. But it all comes back, don't I firmly believe, to self-protection and self-preservation. You do those things which you've been instructed to do. I don't even want to say instructed, advice, because instructive sounds so non-democratic. It sounds as though it's being shoved down.
Yes.
Oh, that's a nice word. So let's talk again about those things that you've been advised to do. Right now, we've been advised to reduce the social gatherings. I passed a few rum shops.
Yes, you passed a few rum shops.
And they're still socially gathered there.
Less than 25?
Less.
All right, less than 25. So they're keeping the instruction or advice going, okay?
Less than 25.
You've got a call, by the way, if you were interested.
Yes, let's take that call. Good evening. Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Good evening, Doc, to you and Gregston.
Hi, good evening.
Yes, sir.
No, Doc, I want to engage you a little bit.
Oh, dear.
How can you not panic or have fear when you get information from one side of the medical fraternity to say A, and then another side of the same medical fraternity telling you B?
Okay, hold on 1 second. Let me ask you one quick question. Do you eat eggs?
I eat eggs mostly in cake. I try not to.
Well, I eat eggs.
Okay, right. So let me tell you why I asked you that question. The medical fraternity at one point in time, at one side, said eggs were bad for you. And then on the other side, they said eggs are good for you. At one point in time, the medical fraternity said milk was bad for you. And now milk is good for you. There has never been a point in history where 100% of the medical fraternity has agreed on anything.
But Doc, to use that analogy is not a good one.
No, it is the same principle. It might have a different outcome, but the principle is the same. So what you do, what you've done, sir, is that you have decided that you are going to eat eggs. Persons are responsible for deciding what they're going to believe.
Right.
I'll tell you what, though. Let me interrupt you for a second, please. Depending on your example, you can give it. If it's not going to get anybody in any trouble, it's fine if you can give it. Well, what is your example that says the medical fraternity on one hand is saying A and then another side is saying B? What is the example you're willing to give us?
The example is that I asked a doctor, a well-known, very popular doctor.
No names.
No names, of course not. I know better than that, doctor.
Okay, great. So we're good.
We are good, Greg. He was saying, I asked him if you can catch the virus. Once you have the virus and it's gone, if you can catch it again, he said no. Another section of the medical fraternity said, it can return, it can come back.
That's a very interesting question.
Let me try to answer that one. What happens is that we don't have enough evidence about this particular coronavirus to say that it offers lifelong immunity, as in the case of chickenpox. For example, if you get chickenpox, you are guaranteed lifelong immunity. So for the time being, you still have to behave as though you are at risk. Once you are let out of an isolation facility or you've been let out of quarantine, you still have to carry on the same procedures of washing your hands, of trying to...
Same regimen.
Right, because the possibility does exist. Since we do not know for a fact that it confers lifelong immunity, that you can be at risk again. Even if it does confer lifelong immunity, we don't know it, so you must behave as though it doesn't.
I'll tell you what, let me interrupt you again, caller. Just 1 second. And this is in response to what you're asking, because that same very question that the example that he just gave you with reference to the question he asked the doc, that was also put in a forum that I was attending, and the doctor at that time said exactly what the caller said, that no, you cannot get it again. However, when I read the news the other night, our minister said, yes, you can get it again, emphatically. Now, when I put that same question, having both those pieces of information from two different medical professionals, I put information to one of the personnel in the health fraternity. She then sought to explain to me that, and I don't know if this is correct or not, but she said that the virus has two strains. One strain, if you get, you can not get it again. But the other one, if you get that strain, you won't ever get it again. So, and the person said that when the doctor told you that, no, you cannot get it again, there should have been a little more explanatory on that.
Right.
So I don't know. So I understand why the caller is asking this question, because that same question was asking for my attendant.
The other thing is this, right? I've been hearing a lot of people, including my prime minister, who I love dearly, say not to panic. But how can you be in a war zone and don't know if you're going to get a shot and not panic? I'm not get scared.
But one of those things that soldiers are trained to do is that in the face of danger, they keep their panic levels down, right? They focus on the task at hand. And one of the analogies I had actually planned to mention as we battle through this coronavirus infection would be a series of army personnel soldiers with our shields interlocked, because each of us interacting with the person next to us, and this is only figuratively because we're social distancing, but we lock our shields and we fight together as a people. We just heard from Dr. Bell, and she said it is a case where we're dealing with something that's new, and it's something that threatens you as an individual. And the human body, if you're faced with a threat, you do one of two things: you either run or you stand up and you prepare to fight. So if you decide to run, you've panicked and you've fled. So we're trying to tell people, you're going to panic. We understand that. But after you have had that initial panic, you calm yourself down and you try to make rational decisions based on the information that you are getting.
But Doc, that's why I'm getting to love you. Because you see...
He's
not there yet.
Go ahead, caller.
But Doc, you see the fish you just gave? I like that explanation. Because it explains to you a little bit more than what I'm hearing from the people that know. Because I see if you're in a war zone and you don't know if you're going to get shot, so obviously you would panic and you'll be living in fear. But that won't happen to the soldiers because they're prepared for that. By talking about regular citizens or regular residents of the area where the war is being fought, they are the ones, and in this case, it's the regular population that don't know when or if it would ever get to them. So how can you tell me not to be fearful or not to panic? That's the point I'm making, really.
Yeah, we understand. And the natural human response is to be afraid. But after you're afraid, then what?
Then you calm down.
You calm down and you press on.
Right. But the last thing I want to mention to you, Doc.
Yeah, sure. Because we've got another call on the line with you. See, yeah, so go ahead, please.
Some years ago, I was in the hospital. And I was in there because they was running some tests on me to find out if I had leptospirosis or flu. And Dr. Roach at the time, who is now Professor Roach, told me that the symptoms for leptospirosis and the flu are basically the same or very, very similar. So I haven't heard you this evening explain about the various, the different things about this corona and flu. I would now want Dr. to add that leptospirosis symptom to that, because the leptospirosis symptom can be very similar to all the other things that you were describing earlier in the piece.
Mm-hmm. So we have to remember that there are other illnesses that can present like the flu, so persons should seek help from their doctor. And we're going to talk a little bit towards the end about seeking medical attention.
Yeah. Anyway, thanks for taking me.
No problem.
No problem. Have a good evening. I think we've got another caller. We've got three callers, actually, but I think... hello, good evening.
Good evening.
Ah, I'm still there. Go ahead, please.
I'm calling. I know it's not about the coronavirus, but the doctor has said that you don't get chicken pox more than once. But I thought when you get it again, they call it...
It's shingles?
Shingles.
Right, yeah. So it's not chicken pox per se, and it's not that you get it again. The virus actually lives in the nerves, so it becomes reactivated in a particular... group of persons.
Okay. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
You're welcome.
Have a good evening. Doc, we've got another one for you.
Good evening. Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Good evening to you. I got a question to you. They say that this coronavirus is like the flu, okay? And if this is like the flu, you know, people that cough and sneeze and it's all over the road, white, green, brown, all sorts of things. And then it gets into the atmosphere. So from that point of view, right, don't you think that the coronavirus could be airborne as well?
Right. We had discussed this earlier where I had said that right now the World Health Organization is investigating whether or not it is airborne. Scientists are still trying to get that figured out. So for now, we're still going with close contact and droplets on surfaces. But the possibility exists that it could be.
Yeah, because the thing about it is, if it's similar to the cold virus, you know, then people cough or sneeze, it can get in the atmosphere and it can blow. I think that's what's behind you being in an office and people sneeze and next thing going air conditioning, everybody gets sick.
But right? This is why we're having this discussion, because what we're trying to do is get persons to change their personal behavior. Behavior change doesn't happen immediately, but with something as serious as this virus, which is spreading like wildfire, we're trying to get people to learn to cough into tissues and wash their hands. It can be airborne if it's in a tissue and placed in the garbage.
And the next thing I have to ask, if you go in a public convenience and you touch the faucet with your naked hand and you got this coronavirus and stuff and you wash your hands and turn off the pipe and somebody has come now and then get a spray bottle and spray or whatever, you think that virus could last on that faucet for about 24 hours?
Some of the studies are showing that the coronavirus can last on surfaces up to 72 hours. Again, we've advised that when you have to turn a tap off, that you use a tissue to turn the tap off, because it defeats the whole purpose of washing your hands and then turning the tap off, which has a whole heap of things, not only coronavirus possibly. If you think about coming from a bathroom with some persons who would have used the bathroom and their hands might have been a little soiled and they touched that, you think about it. So you use a tissue to turn the tap off. And if you can't use a tissue, if there's no tissue available, you try to use your elbow to turn the tap off. You don't want your fingers to be used to turn the tap off.
And suppose some person who is handicapped, right? Or disabled.
Well, we prefer to say disabled.
Go to the bathroom and they actually hold the door. Because you're not saying this door, now it's just a little lower. You understand? What will happen in that situation? Do you think that they can pick up a germ on their hands or have this virus on the fingers or what? Yes, me think. This thing is real serious, you know.
It is serious. We're not taking it lightly at all. But again, we're trying to reinforce the fact it doesn't matter if you're disabled, you're in a wheelchair. Try not to put your hands in your face. Don't touch your mouth. Don't touch your nose. If you have to wash your hands, try your best to get tissue to turn the tap off. And if you have to try to get out from a door, try to open the door with a tissue. Right?
Yeah.
So try to reduce the amount of times your hands are coming into contact with surfaces. If you have to sneeze or cough, think about the other person's. And try to contain that sneeze. This is not an ideal situation where you put information out in the public and everybody obeys. It's not going to happen. So we have to try to protect ourselves.
Okay, yeah, because this thing making you panic and getting scary about certain.
And again, we just had a conversation with a previous caller about the role of panic. Panic leads to irrational behavior. You do things, you say things, you act in ways which, in the grand scheme of things, don't really make sense. We can't tell you not to panic. We cannot tell you not to panic because it's an automatic response. I think what we're trying to say is that you try to remain as calm as possible. I think that's the best thing to say. Remain as calm as possible.
And if you go in the supermarket and somebody sneezes, right, and they're close to a flower or something like that, right, that could go through the paper that the flower in. Or something like that. I don't know. I guess skeptical.
Yeah, that's real panic there now.
Yes, this is what panic sounds like.
Okay.
So you try your best not to worry about anything, because if we start thinking along that lines, then we wouldn't go into the supermarkets. We're not going to touch anything. We're going to keep everybody away. You're going to forever be wiping down surfaces. So you try your best to remain as calm as possible. I think that's the best that I can help you with, ma'am.
Okay, there. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Thank you for your call. Have a good evening. I think we've got another call in line.
Before we answer this person, there was somebody on WhatsApp who wondered if persons were afraid to cough and sneeze. And yes, there actually are people that you can see forcibly trying to contain sneezes and hold back coughs. Somebody in Jamaica was beaten because he or she sneezed.
Oh dear, he.
You know, on a bus or something like that. And again, I don't know if that is official news or if this is one of
those things
on
social
media, which we're going to discuss. Oh my goodness me, we can't even discuss it. But yes, let's try to take these calls quickly.
Two have disappeared. Let's see if the other one is still here. Good evening.
Good evening.
Yes, go ahead.
To you and yours and to the dog there.
Yes, go quickly because we're running out of time and we've got some callers on the line, you see.
First, you were speaking about shingles. I want to know if people, I want to talk about you because one or two. Does people repeat shingles more than once?
You can get a flare-up of the shingles, symptoms of the shingles infection.
Okay. All right, with the coronavirus, if people go into the supermarket, which I always do, when you come home, you wipe your things off, you clean them off, you wash off your bottles and your tins and get a cloth with some detergent and you wipe your flour and plastic and you wipe them off. And now that this thing is happening, you do that. What I would say to persons, if you don't have to go, the warning is not to go out. But my concern is if this thing linger on. Well, I'm glad that the Prime Minister put in a lot of things in place, but I know it's the vulnerable who can really feel it, and those at the bottom of the scale is going to feel it a whole lot. And I hope that the things that put in place, that those persons who really in need would get, if it had to come really serious in this country, would get, you know, the help that they're supposed to.
Right, and sorry to interrupt you, but your sentiments are being expressed by somebody here on WhatsApp. They're wondering about the homeless community, and we are trying, when I say we, I guess we as a people, we're trying our best to look out for the vulnerable and to make sure that they are not left out there.
Well, I am glad that the Prime Minister started, and I told you she hit the ground running, and she started, but I just hope that what she said and it would share equally to the person that at the scale right down to the bottom, as you say, the homeless and the vulnerable.
Right. Thank so those persons
much.
Who are involved in the Ministry of Social Work, sorry about that, those persons involved in the Ministry of Social Work, they're the ones who are responsible for trying to formulate plans and figure out how they're going to manage the vulnerable. So everybody has been impacted by this viral infection.
Before we go to the next call, the caller before mentioned something about the air conditioning. At the forum I attended, the doctor said that it wouldn't be able to spread through the air conditioning. So I don't know, you can go along armed with that piece of knowledge. So we can continue.
Okay, so one of the things that I must correct myself, I actually said disabled, even although that's a word that we still use to discuss those persons who have challenges, whether they be physical, mental, or so on. Perhaps the more politically correct term is differently abled, so my apologies to that person. And as we begin to wind down, we are going to take a break.
Germany is banning gatherings of more than two people in public outside work as it tightens measures to try to stem the coronavirus pandemic.
In public, it's going to be compulsory to stand at least 1.5 metres, better 2 metres apart from other people. You're allowed to go out in public on your own or with one other person not in the same household or with people in the same household. You can go to work, you can go to the doctor, you can go out to individually practice sport and get some fresh air. Most other activities outside are banned, as are groups of people gathering together also inside. This will last for 2 weeks, and at that point, the government will look again to see what sort of impact these rules have had on the spread of the virus.
For the first time since the pandemic took hold, Italy has announced a slight decrease in the rate of new infections. Another 651 people died in the last 24 hours.
It's been an utterly bleak week for Italy. Its president, Sergio Mattarella, has spoken of the pain his society was undergoing, saying its elder generation had been decimated in parts of the country.
Good evening. Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Good evening to you, Doctor.
Good evening.
Yeah, should there be any distances instituted between family members in the house, same household?
Wow, that's a difficult one, because within... close contact is defined as those persons who are living in the same household. Yeah. Unless there is some discord in the relationships in a particular household, it's going to be very difficult to have social distancing within a household.
So that's not risky then?
There could be risk, because if you think about it, one person could have been exposed and then they come back home and they're involved with the other persons in their home. So which is why we're trying our best to limit persons going out and interacting. And we are still within the household, you're still expected to do those things such as wipe down counters and make sure you contain your sneezes and coughs and so on. And if at any point in time you think that you might have been exposed, the national hotline, the number is 536-4500. So you can call that hotline. You may have a little delay in getting through, but don't give up, persist, and you can have information on what is the next best step.
Okay, thank you very much.
You are welcome.
Hello?
Good evening.
Hello?
Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Can the virus be breathed in?
Okay, so we discussed this a little earlier.
Or rest on your lips?
We are not certain, according to the World Health Organization and the Centers for Disease Control, that the virus is airborne. It's spread by droplets. Droplets. We think it's spread by droplets, where the virus is contained in these little particles, these little drops.
Right.
And they get into the respiratory system, but when they come into contact with your mouth and nose.
Right. So it's possible then that you can breathe them in through your nostrils then?
Well, if you put them near there, then yes.
So, and washing your hands, the process then should be washing your face or having a mask to stop it from going too.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that word mask, because we were just about to discuss masks.
Right. Go ahead. So is it possible that it can harm you from that angle?
We're going with droplets. We're going with close contact, person-to-person contact, right? We're not going airborne. It has not been official that somebody can go somewhere and sneeze and the virus is there living in the air for whatever length of time and you pass by and inhale it. That's not the way we are thinking right now.
Oh, so it's somewhat undecided.
It's not undecided. This is the novel coronavirus. Novel meaning new. There's still so much we don't know about this virus, about the way it acts. And viruses have that ability to change and alter. So we are still learning. And when I say we, I mean healthcare professionals, human beings in general, leaders. Yeah, everybody's still learning.
And me as well.
Exactly, the individual.
All right. In order for that, I want you to come to the top of the class at 5:30. Thank you ever so much. Top of the class at 5:30.
Thank you very much.
All right, good.
So let's briefly, before we
Before you run off, though, the gentleman said, not you, sir, thank you kindly. What you did do was create a segue.
But I'm going right there now
with that. No, you mentioned it, because my dear old mother messaged me earlier. Wait, the doctor is doing a wonderful job. You will soon be out of one. That's my mother.
You'll be in a spot above her. She's done a wonderful job, and I put her at the top of the class.
Oh, very well, sir. You're not doing anything like that. So thank you kindly.
All right.
Yes. Have a good evening.
Good evening, sir. Thank you very much.
Mummy says hello, by the way, Doc.
Oh, hello, Mummy.
All right. And I know you want to sum up, but we've got one more caller here. Let's use this one as the last, with your permission. Let's use this as the last. And then you'll give your summary, and then we'll engage Cheryl, who's walked into the studio with her program, Just Jazz, coming up shortly. But she came in with what, Doc?
She came in wearing a glove.
Well, prepared.
And not even a pair. She was wearing one.
Go ahead. There's a call in the line, Doc.
Good evening. Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Yes, good evening. I have to ask you one question. What will happen to the hairdressers? Because she got to get close contact to her client when she wash the hair and put in the rollers and stuff. And what's going to happen to the sex worker? You understand? Them is two things that I'm concerned about.
Right, so persons are at risk by virtue of their professions. Everybody has to make a decision. I don't think that, but we see, if you look at it that way, if you look at it with a hairdresser and close contact, what about a doctor who has to look after somebody, or somebody who's taking care of children in a day nursery and so on? So everybody is still at risk. It goes all the way back to making sure that you wash your hands carefully, that you try not to put your hands in your face, because we're still not functioning with this virus as being airborne. Who knows? Tomorrow you might hear that it's airborne, and we will have to make different put different measures in place. But it all goes back to trying to be as clean as possible.
Yeah, you're trying to be clean, but the thing about her is the sex worker. What was going to happen to that sex worker now?
But when you think about the sex worker, everybody is at risk, ma'am. I don't think that the sex worker is at increased risk by virtue of his or her profession. I don't see that they're at increased risk. They're the same persons in society. That doesn't put them at an increased risk. I don't think so.
Well, I'll tell you this much, caller. The narrative has been for most people to stay at home. Maybe they will have to do the same thing.
Okay.
All right. You get me, right?
Yeah. All right.
For this time, they might have to stay at home in order to reduce the risk of getting the infection. All right. Doc, I know you said that was the last, but this one for sure is the last.
Let it not be said that I went over my time.
Cheryl, we're going to give you back your time, we're going to give you back your time, Cheryl, but we have to curtail you this evening, because this is a good time to let listeners know as well that we will be bringing a condensed version of the speech made by the Minister of Tourism, Kerry Simmons. That will come directly after the program Just Jazz, right here on The Voice of Barbados. So let's engage this caller, and then we wrap up with the good doctor.
Good evening. Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Hello. Good evening, Doc.
Good evening.
I just want to say I want to commend you all on the program that you always have every evening.
Thank you.
I want to say that you and the gentleman...
Let's refer to him as... as Ken Hesmans would say, that boy. Gregson is the name.
But Gregson.
Yes, please.
You two make two wonderful a team. And I would hope that this program can continue for quite a long time into the future. Thank you for your information, and thank you for calming us even in these troubling times.
Okay, thank you very much for calling, sir.
Thank you very much.
So we want to summarize. Gloves and masks for the general healthy public are not recommended. they both provide a false sense of security. When you look at the gloves that persons are wearing, if you, for example, let's take the person who might be a gas attendant, and we're not picking on any sector, but those are the persons that we've seen wearing gloves. And the gloves have changed color because they have them on for so long.
Right.
And they offer that false sense of security. Mm-hmm. You think that your hands are clean, so you have the glove on, you're handling your cell phone.
All right.
I actually...
Before you continue, I will give you what was said at the forum I was at. And the good doctor said the same thing you just said. It's not recommended. However, they did say that it's a personal choice. If you choose to engage in wearing gloves or even a mask, that's up to you. But it's not necessarily recommended.
Right. It's not recommended. And unfortunately, there was something on the World Health website where they were asking for donations of a certain number of millions of masks. Because there is a shortage of masks now. Everybody has gone and bought masks. When you are wearing a mask, there's a particular way. It's a particular procedure that you go through. You must wash your hands before you put on the mask. There's a way that you fit the mask around your nose and mouth. It's supposed to be airtight. There's a way you tie the strings and so on. And then there's a certain way that you take the mask off and you must wash your hands again. And persons don't necessarily wash their hands before or after. And you find that persons put their hands in their faces. It's not airtight, so that you can still, you know, put your finger in there and rub your nose. You can still, your eyes and nose, not eyes and nose, mouth and nose, because it's not airtight, they're still exposed. And I was just about to tell you about the lady I saw standing at the bus stop with her glove on and her cell phone. Now, is she going to go home and wipe that cell phone down after she takes off those gloves? No, she's going to go home, put down the cell phone, put the gloves in the garbage, hopefully, and then pick up the same cell phone. And people have been washing gloves. You can't wash single-use gloves. No, you can't. Sorry. You shouldn't wash single-use gloves. But like Gretchen said, it is a preference. If you think that you feel more secure, we can understand that. But it's not recommended.
And one other thing, and you just mentioned it just now, there was a report on CNN. I don't know how many people saw it. We take so much precaution and wipe down every surface and make sure we sanitize and all that. And the very thing you just mentioned just now is the very thing that carries so many germs, and that's one that could be a conduit for this infection.
Yes,
the cell phone. Because we forget about that and we use it indiscriminately, and that is one thing that can carry the virus on it, and bam, there, you got it.
So as we close, I had a little summary prepared, but we're out of time, but I think I just want to...
Go ahead and give your summary. We will give Cheryl back her time. She's looking at me. She's looking at me like, you...
You better have.
Cheryl, you might get turned off by that. Not fine. So,
here we go. Wash your hands with soap and water for at least 20 seconds. If no soap and water are available, we can use an alcohol-based sanitizer with greater than 60% alcohol. The ideal thing is to cough or sneeze into a tissue and discard that tissue and wash your hands afterward. If there is no tissue available, well, perhaps bending your elbow. And if that you can't do because you have arthritis, well, then maybe you can sneeze into your hands. But the important thing, we don't want you to sneeze into your hands, but wash your hands. Make sure that your chronic diseases are under control. Don't discontinue any medications without first discussing it with your doctor. Now, if you think that you may be infected, don't go to your doctor's office. Don't go to the polyclinic or don't go to the hospital. You call the national hotline. Let's give you that number again, 536-4500. Look for information from credible sources, the World Health Organization, the Barbados Government Information Service, PAHO, the Centers for Disease Control. Look for credible information. Share information from credible sources. Don't just share what comes into your WhatsApp or your Instagram or so ever. Share information that can be verified as truth. Adhere to guidelines from the authorities. In this case, remember that decisions are being made for the general public, keeping everybody in mind. Look out for the vulnerable in your community. This is not a time for us to be selfish. You have to look out for those persons who might be negatively impacted by the changes that have been put in place with respect to the COVID-19 infection. And try your best to be calm. Try your best to be calm. And the last thing I want you to remember is that somebody else's life is in your hands. Please wash them.
I like that. Yes. That was good. Love it, Doc.
Thank you.
All right. There you go. 10 minutes into Cheryl's time. But We are happy to be the ones to be able to deliver information that people want to hear. And as usual, Doc, thank you kindly. Remember, the good doctor comes here every Sunday on her own volition. She isn't paid. This show has no budget. I am not paid for it either, but I got to be here anyway, so that's quite okay. And thank you guys for being part of the show. We are very happy to know that you are enjoying what is being done. You're learning from what is being done, and we will continue to do it as long as possible. The good doctor, thank you so kindly.
No problem at all.
That's Dr. Renee Boy. She'll be back next week, Sunday at 7, at 6, I beg your pardon.
And so, I know who's coming.
You do this time.
I know.
Go ahead.
We are going to be discussing with Dr. Adrian Lord next week. We have lots to discuss, so look forward to it.
All right. Next week, 6 o'clock, right here on The Voice of Barbados, 92.9 FM, the Better Health Radio Show. Once again, thanks, Doc. That's Dr. Renee Boyce.